Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Web Sleuths Radio. Thank you for joining us tonight. Let me get the legal goo out of the way. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the guests and the hosts, and of course, I take no responsibility for them, especially my own opinion. Web Sleuths Radio is not the same as WebSleuths.com, which is a completely different corporate entity. We have Kim Sturr, our executive producer, executive administrator, and executive to me, the executive, who does pretty much everything. And joining us later tonight will be, let's see, Mark Class from Class Kids, Isabel Zender from TheExaminer.com, Levi Page, and later on it will be Richard Hornsby. And we're also going to be talking about Trayvon Martin. Now, that's the case that has got everybody, and rightly so, so completely and very upset. But what we're seeing happening on both sides is the extremism, and that is what we can't have, my friends. Trayvon was the 17-year-old who was shot and killed by George Zimmerman, a community watch person who, according to his story, he was just defending himself. But yet, the evidence seems to point in other directions. We don't know what's going on, but we'll get into all of that a little bit later on. But I just would like everybody to please remain calm. I'm the only one that can get upset, throw a fit, and scream and cut you off. Remember that. Okay, Mark Class, welcome to Web Sleuths Radio. Again, second week in a row. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Tricia. You know that.
Thank you. Levi Page will be joining us in just a little bit, but first off, we're going to talk about Sierra Lamar, a beautiful young lady who has simply vanished, a story that is all too familiar and all too heartbreaking. Mark, why don't you give us a background on that, please?
Well, sure. Sierra Lamar was a 15-year-old girl in Morgan Hill, California, and she was walking to catch her school bus on March 16th at about 7 o'clock in the morning. When she just disappeared. I mean, it's like she literally vanished off the face of the earth. Now, the family wasn't aware that she never made it to the school bus until later that afternoon, when an automatic response went from the school to say that she had not attended that day. That was unusual for Sierra. She was a very outgoing, energetic young girl who has an awful lot of friends. Within a day, law enforcement found her cell phone. It appeared to have been thrown from a moving car off the side of the road in a direction heading away from where Sierra would have been going towards her school bus. The next day, and this was not released until the other day, her Juicy Couture handbag, I think it was also located not far from the telephone, and it too appeared to have been thrown from the side of the road. Inside, they found some of her school books. They also found a neatly folded pair of clothing, a pair of pants, and a T-shirt. Now, it appears that is the same T-shirt that she was wearing when she tweeted from home at about 7 o'clock that morning. Now, that doesn't mean, Tricia, that she was wearing the T-shirt, only that she tweeted it at that time. And law enforcement has been putting on a very hard, full press investigation ever since then. The FBI is definitely involved now, and the Class Kids Foundation has made contact with the family, or the family made contact with the Class Kids Foundation, and we will be conducting community-wide searches beginning at 8 o'clock on Tuesday morning.
That's right, and Web Sleuths will be helping with that, and I want to let our listeners know to check into Web Sleuths. We are going to be helping Class Kids with the search. We're going to get people to donate food and water, and if we can't get the businesses to donate, then we'll pony up the money. We'll get our members to help, but I'll be putting up all that information here in just a little bit. Mark, like I said at the beginning, this is an all-too-familiar and horrible story, the fact that she just absolutely vanished. Is there any thought that she ran away? Is there any inkling that that is a possibility?
No. it's really not, for a number of reasons. Like I said, she was an outgoing girl. She had many, many friends in school. She loved going to school. She loved coming home. She had moved within the last 4 months, but that didn't seem to be presenting any problems. Her mom had her going to a counselor to help with that transition. There didn't seem to be any problems within the family. There didn't seem to be any depression or anything like that within the girl. And her older sister, Danielle, was headed home from Sacramento State, where she is a student, for spring break. And they I apologize for using the past tense. They are a very close sisters, and she was absolutely looking forward to visiting with Danielle over the course of the week. And she had just disappeared, you know, days before. She was also looking forward to getting her hair dyed later that afternoon. So there was no indication at all that she would have run away, particularly if that was even a consideration. Then what? She staged her own kidnapping by tossing her cell phone away. There's been no activity on any of her social media accounts. There's been no contact from her or by her. Her friends seem to be devastated. Trisha, it just seems as if she's, just like so many before her in the Bay Area, seems that she's disappeared off the face of the earth. And I just want to give a little context here. The San Francisco Bay Area has seen more than its fair share of predatory abductions. This is a pattern that goes back decades. It started with Kevin Collins in the modern era, and it includes Nikki Campbell, includes Amber Schwartz, it includes Eileen Mikuloff, it includes Michaela Garrett, it includes Polly, it includes Ziana Fairchild, it includes Mitzi Sanchez. The list just goes on and on and on, and one has to wonder who exactly is being attracted to the Bay Area that makes them go after our kids like this.
Any idea? Any thoughts? Any suggestions? I don't know. I mean, it's just I'm at a loss for words. I don't know. What do you think, Mark?
Well, most of these cases have not been solved. Now, Polly's case was solved. Mitzi Sanchez, who happened to affect her own recovery, her case was solved. And in both of those cases, it was a sexually sadistic psychopath. I mean, that seems to be the pattern. Most of the other cases have never been solved. The closest one would be Philip Garrido, who people believe may be involved in some of these cases, who is currently serving a life sentence for the crimes he committed against J.C. Dugard over a period of 18 years. Now, in Sierra's case, it's rather an interesting circumstance. I've been to the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a remote area. It's in an area where if you don't have business there, you're probably not going to be there. And Sierra lives at the end of a cul-de-sac. There are approximately 8 houses on either side of the street as she heads up towards Doherty Road, where she then makes a left turn and goes one block to catch her school bus. Once she gets to the end of Doherty Road, or gets to the end of her road at Doherty, there is nothing but open fields. And I have a tendency, my theory is that whatever happened to her probably happened in her neighborhood, on her block.
That's what it seems.
You know, of course, that's only my theory at this point.
Let's go to Kimster. Kimster, you have a question for Mark. Why don't you go ahead?
Yes, I do. Actually, when you were talking about all the young ladies that have gone missing in that area, Mark, is Atwater in that area?
No, I don't know that community, no.
Okay, I thought it was over there because our cold case from 1982 is about a girl gone missing from Atwater. Thank you. I just wasn't sure about that.
Whoa. And what's her name?
This is Kimster.
The
name of the missing girl.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Pamela Pedro.
I'm not familiar with that case.
And, you know, Mark, we're just talking about the children here. Can you imagine the adult women that have gone missing in California? like we've talked about before, this is really an epidemic of sadistic predators out there, you know, searching for our children. And then, and we were talking a little bit about this off the air, we won't get into it too much tonight, but, you know, you have your Twitter and your Facebook, and kids put things on there without thinking. They don't think of the consequences. They don't think about who is looking at their stuff. And
well,
go ahead.
Go on. No, continue.
I was just going to say, and that, you know, that to me is one of the biggest problems, because they don't know who's looking at it. They don't know who can find them. They put out information there that is easy to read and to get to their location. They don't understand the danger in it. Go ahead. We're talking with Mark Klass. We're talking about the Sierra Lamar case. Sierra has gone missing, and Klass Kids is going into Sierra City to conduct a search on Tuesday. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, we've actually flown Brad in. Brad Dennis, our search director. We've also flown in Don Davis from the Laura Recovery Center. And then Brad has one of his team members, Lori Streit, who will be flying in tomorrow to assist with the administration of what we hope will be a very large community search. But to get back a little bit to the internet and to the social networking sites, everything you said is exactly right. And there are absolutely no controls on the internet. You know, when we register convicted sex offenders in this country for a very specific purpose. Number one, we know that they have a tendency to revisit their crimes or commit other similar crimes, that they're a highly recidivist community. Number two, we know that law enforcement can use this information to launch an investigation when a crime has occurred that fits a particular predator's pattern. And number three, the public can use this information to protect themselves. Now, when Megan's Law was written in the 1990s, the internet wasn't really a factor. So internet identifiers were not considered an important part of the registration process, so they were ignored. Well, we haven't updated that. We make these guys give us their fingerprints, their DNA, their addresses, where they're employed. Oftentimes they have to wear GPS chips. But when it comes to the internet, there are absolutely no controls whatsoever. So in other words, a predator who knows his way around the internet can create profiles on any one of a number of social networking sites, and there's absolutely nothing anybody can do about it, including the administrators of the social networking sites themselves. They don't know who these people are.
Well,
therefore, in California last year, we attempted to create legislation that would allow law enforcement, that would force registered sex offenders to include internet identifiers as part of the registration process, so that social networking sites could then use that information, their IM handles, their email addresses, etc., could use that information then to scrub relevant profiles from their online communities. And we failed twice.
How? What is the argument for letting them keep that information private?
Well, ask Tom Amiano. I mean, he is the chairman of the Public Safety Committee in the State Assembly that defeated it, that wouldn't let it out of committee. So what we've done, Tricia, is we've taken another step. What we've done is in California, you can go on you can do an initiative. You can collect numerous signatures, get an issue placed on the ballot, and then put it forth for the people to vote on it one way or the other. Well, that's what we did. We collected over 875,000 signatures to put the internet update, the Megan's Law update on the November ballot in California, and it's called the CASE Act, Californians Against Sexual Exploitation Act. And my guess is that unlike our do-nothing legislature, we will get overwhelming support from the people in California, because they understand that the more information you have to protect yourself and the more information that everybody has to protect themselves, the safer that we will be. Now, this just might sound like pie in the sky theorizing, but the reality is that this law is based upon legislation that was passed in New York State in 2008. And since that time, and you have to realize, in New York, there's probably half as many registered sex offenders as there are in California. In New York, since 2008, more than 25,000 profiles have been scrubbed from MySpace and Facebook accounts alone. So
wow.
This is something that will be successful. So I would encourage anybody, and we don't have a proposition number yet, but I would encourage anybody that is in your listening audience that lives in California that when they vote in November, to definitely vote in favor of the CASE Act.
Yes, I can't imagine. I would really like to hear the argument against it, and I'm sure it has something to do with privacy laws. But you know what? When you're a sexual predator, you give up your rights to privacy because society needs to be protected first and foremost. And that to me is the hands-down winning argument. Mark, in the Sierra Lamar case, you're going to start the big search on Tuesday. Will it continue past Tuesday, or is it just going to be on Tuesday?
No, it will continue past Tuesday. We have established a Sierra Search Center, which is located at Burnett Elementary School at 85 Tilton Road in Morgan Hill. And individuals who would like to participate in the search for Sierra should check in at the Burnett School between 8 o'clock and 1 o'clock, starting on Tuesday the 27th. Searches will be conducted throughout the week, commencing at 8 o'clock daily through and including Sunday, April 1st, 2012. Now, if the case has not been solved by then, we will create an infrastructure, as we always do in these cases, to continue doing the weekend searches as long as people are willing to turn out. Everything that I see, all the indicators in this particular case, are that huge numbers of people want to help to bring this young girl home. Now, anybody that's in your listening audience that wants to come out and help is more than welcome, but you must understand that you have to be at least 18 years of age and you have to bring a photo ID. You have to dress appropriately for the weather, wear long pants and sturdy covered toe shoes. We need people who can do foot searches as well as individuals who are willing to work in the search center.
That would be fantastic. And I know we have a lot of people in the Northern California area that listen to the show and are members of Web Sleuth and who read at Web Sleuth as well. And we'll put all that information up on Web Sleuth after the show. And we will be looking for people to help with donations, at least contacting businesses. And if we can't, like I said, get anybody to donate, then we have to reach into our own pocket to help out the searchers. But Mark, once again, you are just an amazing man. I don't know how you do it, but you certainly are the defender and the just the person, the go-to person when there is a tragedy like this that happens. And I know you put your heart and your soul and your life into it, and we'll do anything we can to help. Give us your address of your website, please, my dear.
It's classkids.org.
That's wonderful. Okay.
It's as simple as that, KLASKIDS.org. And people can also find me on Facebook.
That's right. You're easy man to find. So give my love to Violet, and we will be in touch.
Right.
And we'll work hand in hand on this case and hopefully bring Sierra home safe and sound. Thank you so much, Mark Klass. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for everything you do for us and everybody else, Tricia.
You bet. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, we have Levi Page on the phone. Levi, my dear, how are you?
Hi, Tricia. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on tonight.
Oh, thank you, and I appreciate you taking the time because I know you've been busy and you were driving and you had to, you know, get home before you could call, so I do appreciate that. Kim, sir, why don't you go ahead and get Isabel on the phone for us, because in just a little bit, Richard Hornsby, I keep wanting to call him Bruce Hornsby in the range, Richard Hornsby, the attorney, will be on the phone with us. And Isabel will be on the phone with us, and we're going to talk about the Trayvon Martin case. And I have not seen a case so emotional, especially a racially emotional case like this one. Here's the thing, Levi. Don't you want to know all the facts? I want to know all the facts. I mean, from what I've seen so far, I to me, it seems like George Zimmerman was absolutely in the wrong. I just feel that way. But I don't have all the facts. And I feel like if I want to hear the other side, I feel like I'm going to be criticized for wanting to hear the other side, and I don't want to feel like that. You know, I want to know everything that is going on. Now, we're going to have some tape here that Isabel has provided for us. I'm going to warn you, it's graphic, it is swearing, and it has, you know, racial slurs in it. It's not pretty, but I want everybody to hear it and see what you think. Levi, what are your thoughts on the Trayvon Martin case? Where are you at on that?
Well, I think that it's horrific because from what we know is that this child was doing nothing but just he had Skittles and iced tea, and he was walking back from a convenience store to his father's home, and this Zimmerman nut job was some neighborhood patrol watch. It sounds to me like he's some sort of control freak, a wannabe law enforcement officer who was watching this person, became suspicious and paranoid because he was in his neighborhood, and started calling 911 on him. Why would you just call 911 because someone's walking down the street? That's no reason to call 911. So I think that his story's very hinky. And if he is using racial slurs on the 911 call, then I think that he may probably be facing some hate crimes charges because they could prove that this was racially motivated.
Exactly. And I like I said, I want to know exactly what happened.
There is a witness. That says that Trayvon Martin attacked Zimmerman. A new witness has come forward. But does that mean that Trayvon Martin should have been shot because he attacked Zimmerman? That's not how it is. I think that the only way that Zimmerman could be cleared of everything was if he thought his life was in danger. I don't think you can just shoot someone because they attack you.
Well, and that we're going to be talking to Richard Hornsby about the Stand Your Place or Stand Your Ground law.
Stand Your Ground.
That's it.
Yeah.
Stand Your. We're going to be talking to Richard about that in just a little bit. But here's the thing.
Another thing is, let's say that Trayvon Martin did attack Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of people would get testy if they were walking down the street and they were being harassed by some strange man. Wouldn't you get a little aggravated, Trish, if you were walking down the street and some strange man called 911 to report you and is walking up to you, interrogating you like a police officer? So I think that what happened here most likely is that the Zimmerman thinks that he's some police officer. I think they said that he had called the police an outrageous number of times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was all about, but he had called the police a lot. He was a regular 911 dialer, so he had called them a lot. And if he was calling the police on this 17-year-old for no reason, is walking up to the 17-year-old and is trying to detain him, then, you know, maybe the kid has a right to get violent with him.
Well, and the thing is, and we're going to go to Isabel Zender in just a moment, but here's the thing, and I was telling my friend this as well. You have a kid, a 17-year-old kid, and all I can do is put myself in my son's position. He's 15. They're not going to do the mature thing. They're a kid, okay? Somebody's staring at you, or you're feeling, you know, hinky or threatened by somebody. You're not going to do the right thing and go home to dad or call 911. You're going to be a dumb kid. And I'm not saying that Trayvon was dumb.
This is speculation on my part, Tricia, but what if Zimmerman had came up to this kid, 17 years old, and said, hey, I've called the police on you. You're not going anywhere. You're going to stay right here.
Right.
Zimmerman would be in the wrong, and that would actually be considered kidnapping in a lot of places.
Yes.
Because you remember in the O.J. Simpson case, he was actually charged and convicted of kidnapping because he, with his cohorts, barged in and made those other people in the hotel room. He made them stay there, wouldn't let them leave. He was charged with kidnapping. So if Zimmerman told this child, this 17-year-old, to stay right there, he could be facing kidnapping charges. And if that's what happened, then maybe Trayvon Martin was in the right for
exactly
him, because nobody can force him to stay in a place if he's doing absolutely nothing wrong.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing, too. And Isabel, we'll get to you in just a moment. And Richard Hornsby will get to you as well. Here's the thing. He's not a cop. George Zimmerman isn't a cop. And so you can't expect to treat him like a cop. You can't expect Trayvon to treat him with respect or to treat him like a cop. You know, that's the problem. But let's get to Isabel Zender, and then we'll get to you, Mr. Hornsby, because I really want to talk about this law. Isabel, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really, really appreciate it. I asked you on the very last minute, and thank you so much. Why don't you give us a quick rundown of what we know as fact right now. Now, this could change, as we know, Isabel, but tell us what we know as the facts of the case as we know them right now for Trayvon Martin.
Well, the first thing that I had read and came upon was that his girlfriend said that she was on the phone with him at the time just before the shooting, and ABC News, I guess, did some investigative work on that and found the records that proved that they were indeed on the phone. And she said that Trayvon, this is what her account was that Trayvon said that a man was watching him, so he put on his hoodie and thought that he had lost the man. And then she told him to run, but he said he didn't want to run. And finally, I guess, you know, either he got scared or whatever, and he started to run. And this was about the same time that it sounds like was about the same time that Zimmerman was on the 911 call. And so he thought that he had escaped Zimmerman, according to the girlfriend. And then suddenly Zimmerman was back, and she said that he cornered Trayvon. And then there was an exchange that she overheard or heard on the phone, which Trayvon said, what are you following me for? And Zimmerman asked, what are you doing here? And she said the next thing she heard was it sounded like his headset, the ear plug or whatever,
mm-hmm.
had fell to the ground. And then the phone line went dead. And when she tried to call him back, he didn't answer. And then we know that within moments, the phone lines were hot at 911, because I transcribed some 7 or 8 911 calls of these different neighbors, and you can hear in some of them you can hear the screaming in the background, and there's question as to whether the screaming is Zimmerman or if it's Trayvon, but there's somebody screaming for help. You can clearly hear that when these, you know, or if it could even be somebody else that was standing around screaming for help, for all we know.
Isabel, we're going to have you play in just a moment the
right.
bit of the 911 call that you and I talked about earlier. But right now, if you can hold on just a moment, Isabel, I want to go to attorney Richard Hornsby. And Richard, welcome back to Web Sleuth Radio. We haven't had you on for a while. You're one of our favorites because you get everybody mad, and that's what we love about you. So,
yeah.
Okay, Mr. Hornsby, what is this law in Florida? The name of it is Stand Your Ground, correct?
Yeah, and I just posted, for anybody that's listening, I posted a blog today about the fact that I don't think Stand Your Ground even applies in this case. But what Stand Your Ground is it was passed in 2005, and before the law was passed, essentially whenever a person used deadly force because they were trying to defend themselves, they were supposed to first try to retreat to the walls, as they would say, and then they can only resort to deadly force if retreating wouldn't help them or if it would be futile. And what the Florida law says basically now is that a person no longer has to retreat before using deadly force if they reasonably believe that they need to use deadly force to defend themselves. And that's the issue here, because I don't think what everybody's missing is what exactly transpired between Trayvon and George Zimmerman that led to George Zimmerman grabbing his gun. If Trayvon would have, let's say, started fighting George Zimmerman George Zimmerman, even under the old law, would have been allowed to stand there and fight back with none of the deadly force, meaning his fist. But let's say Trayvon got a, you know, on top of him and started beating on him, which appears there's some physical evidence that suggests that. Well, even under the old law, George Zimmerman might have been entitled to pull out his gun and shoot Trayvon if he couldn't get Trayvon off of him. And so that's a big issue here. I think the real issue is whether or not George Zimmerman's use of his gun was reasonable under the circumstances. And it would have been the same way under the old law and under the new law. So that's the big issue. I've reviewed it, and I think that this isn't really a senior ground case. It's a reasonable case. It was George Zimmerman's use of his firearm reasonable. For whatever reason, law enforcement believes it was, and, you know, we don't know everything law enforcement knows, and so that's kind of where we're at.
Well, Mr. Hornsby, let me just ask you this, because you know more about this than I do. I've read up a little bit on the police department, and it seems that people claim that this particular police department does not have a good race relations, the Sanford, Florida Police Department. There's racial tensions in the town. There's been racial problems in the past. Could it be, I'm not trying to play the race card. I'm just trying to find the facts. Could it be, and when you take into the fact the call that we're going to play, the little bit of call we're going to play, it sounds like, and I apologize, here comes the racial slur and the swear word. It sounds like he says fucking coon on the tape. Don't you think this could be a racial situation?
You know, I don't even know. I don't know. Could it be a racial situation? Sure, but you know what? Like, I'm disgusted by the fact people are suddenly, if the guy's Hispanic, he's either Hispanic, but suddenly he's a white Hispanic to all the media because that doesn't fit into their narrative of a white guy against a black guy. You know, the problem is I know black people that are racist against other black people. I know Hispanics
right.
that don't like, you know, sure, could it be racial? Absolutely. I've listened to 100 different people try to figure out what's on that recording you're about to play, and no one can say for sure. People will hear whatever they want to hear. And so that's my answer. You're going to hear whatever you want to hear in that. And what I hear is, I don't know. I can't tell.
I honestly didn't know what was said, and that's what it sounded like to me. That was my first, if you want to call it a guess, that was my first guess. Isabel, do you have that ready?
Yes, I do.
Okay, this might be a little hard to hear, but everybody, your mics are live, so just keep that in mind. Isabel, go ahead and play the part. This is George Zimmerman from the 911 call, where it sounds like he is using this language to describe Trayvon, but you be the judge, okay? Go ahead, Isabel.
More clearly, that's correct. I'll boost it up a little bit more there, and we'll give it a shot here. That does sound a little clearer to me.
Okay, thank you. Now, I'm sorry, that's just what it sounds like to me. And I didn't know what he had said. That was my first guess. Here's a very real possibility. And Mr. Hornsby, you tell me if this is something that you feel could be reasonable. George Zimmerman, there were reports of a couple of black youths, if I remember correctly, that have been breaking in to the area. George Zimmerman, being the neighborhood watch guy, saw Trayvon walking down the street and felt it was his duty to do something. And he approached him, and it just got out of control. I just can't see, with what we know right now, how he could have, being the fact that he wasn't a cop, how he could have used reasonable force. That's where I'm stuck. If he had been a cop, I understand it. But Trayvon didn't know who he was.
Here's the facts. George Zimmerman, whether we like it or not, was allowed to go follow Trayvon. He was lawfully allowed to have his firearm on his person because he had a concealed weapons permit. So, and George Zimmerman is allowed to confront anybody, just like you or me are, and say, hey, what are you doing here? Explain yourself. So did he use the best judgment? That's the first issue. Yes, was that judgment? I mean, no, he didn't use the best judgment. But was that judgment nonetheless lawful? Yes, it was completely lawful. And so, you know, we keep saying, well, he didn't, you know, he wasn't reasonable what he did. But what we don't know, and it's the one question that nobody can answer except for George Zimmerman and maybe the police based upon other evidence they have, is what caused George Zimmerman and Trayvon to physically become in an altercation. Not George Zimmerman to pull out his gun, because apparently that didn't get pulled out until after they, you know, physically interlocked with each other. And that's what we don't know. If he confronted Trayvon and then Trayvon started attacking him or beating him or something, you know, sure, if he fell on the ground, he felt like he was in a defenseless position, he's allowed to pull out his gun. That's the law. I don't necessarily agree with it, but that's the law. And see, what we're all doing is we're sitting here speculating, and law enforcement heard everything, and for whatever reason, they made a determination that George Zimmerman was in the right to use his gun when he did under the circumstances.
Levi Page, what do you think about what Richard Hornsby is saying?
Well, I'm not going to argue with him because he knows the law in Florida better than I do. But hypothetically speaking, what if Zimmerman tried to detain this 17-year-old Trayvon and told him, you can't leave here. I've called the police on you. You can't leave. Stay right there. You know, wouldn't that give Trayvon Martin the right to fight back and say, I don't have to stay here? And maybe that's why a fight broke out.
You know what? And you're right. Here's the thing. Again, it comes to reasonableness. If George Zimmerman tried to enforce an incorrect interpretation of the law and it resulted in his child getting killed, well, George Zimmerman's use of his gun wouldn't be reasonable because he's the one who caused the altercation. So under your scenario, Levi, I would argue, and I think the prosecutor would, that it wasn't reasonable the way he used his gun. And that's the whole issue. It's all going to boil down to what caused the two of them to get into a physical altercation that resulted in George Zimmerman pulling out his gun. Was it what you're saying, Levi, where, you know, George Zimmerman used an incorrect interpretation of the law that results in this? Or was it, you know, Trayvon basically, you know, swung at the guy and then got him on the ground and then was beating him? It's all going to depend on that issue.
Exactly.
And you know, another thing that I found interesting, Tricia, was regarding the broken nose that Zimmerman allegedly had and the head wound that he suffered. With those sort of injuries, wouldn't it be standard protocol for law enforcement to call an ambulance to come pick him up to have him examined?
And that's what I don't get why that didn't happen. Thank you, Levi. Isabel Zender from TheExaminer.com, who's written extensively about this and has taken the time to transcribe many of the 911 calls that came in that night. What are your thoughts about what has been said?
On which point? I'm sorry.
Just about the police not calling an ambulance.
Yeah, I found that kind of odd as well. If he had wounds and a head wound and all of that, broken nose, you would think a broken nose would lead to a lot of bleeding. You know, I would assume that they would take him in and, you know, have the ambulance take him in and be checked. What people
sure, just
complain
I didn't mean to cut you off. What the standard protocol for that is they offer him the option of having EMTs respond, and if he declined it, and it happens very frequently, so I'm just going to leave it at that. It's not uncommon for people to decline medical treatment, even though they have injuries. But that's what would have happened. They would have offered it to him.
And then he declined it, and that's why. Isabel, you transcribe many of these 911 calls.
Mm-hmm.
What you obviously have a kind of maybe a picture painted in your mind based on what these 911 calls have said. Why don't you describe that to us? What were the neighbors saying? What were the 911 calls? Let's put it together if we can, and maybe we can make some sense of this.
There were most of them were females. There was one male that called in. They were frantic, saying that they couldn't imagine something like this was happening. This happened like directly behind somebody's porch that was calling in too. And it sounded like nobody could really see anything because it was dark. It was more of what they heard, the screaming, the gunshots. They were too scared to go out there. So I kept getting the sense that nobody wanted to go out, and then they felt guilty once they knew somebody had been killed. And everybody, pretty much, I think everyone said that the screaming voice was a male.
Mm-hmm. But they couldn't tell who it was. They couldn't tell which person was screaming. Mm-hmm. That's, we can't tell who was yelling help. And I think that's important as well. You know,
I think really important.
That's really important. And Richard Hornsby, you hit something perfectly. And that is, you know, did George Zimmerman break the law? Or did he just use bad judgment? Which is it? You know, the fact is that you got to remember, Trayvon was a kid. And if you have teenagers, especially boys, they are not going to, you know, back down from somebody like George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman was the adult. George Zimmerman had the gun. And I feel that if he put Trayvon in a situation where Trayvon felt he had to defend himself, does that give George Zimmerman the right to shoot him? Go ahead.
Can I ask a question? Does anybody remember that Zimmerman supposedly had a red sweater on or something, sweatshirt?
I have not heard that. Have you heard that, Levi?
I don't recall what he was wearing that night.
Because that was my understanding from something. I'd have to go back and look. But I'm looking at one of the 911 callers, which was a female. And she said she's looking out of her window, and the guy on top had a white T-shirt. Mm.
Well, Trayvon was wearing the black hoodie, wasn't he?
Yes.
Right.
So
the guy on top had a white T-shirt, she said.
Well, there you go.
If the guy on top had a T-shirt and Trayvon had a hoodie, than the guy on bottom, you know. So now you've got conflicting 911, but you've got this neighbor saying she's looking out her window. I mean, she's frantic. She's looking out, answering questions of the 911 dispatcher.
Can I just interject something about the relevance of the 911 calls?
Yeah.
All these calls took place after the shot.
Some of them actually they heard the shot. I think one of them heard the shot while they were on the phone.
Some people thought there was actually two shots too. So what they heard might have been everybody thought might have been the second shot.
Yeah, they thought they heard. Yeah, I heard several people say they thought they heard two shots. One of them sounded like she was saying, "I hear people screaming," and then she heard a shot. Whether that was the first shot or not, I don't know. But this lady is saying she's looking out. It was by her porch area. She's looking out her window, and she sees a guy on top with a white T-shirt. She says, oh, my God, the guy on top has a white T-shirt.
Richard Hornsby, what were you going to say about the relevance of the 911 calls?
Well, a lot of people, I've seen that lady that's on Anderson Cooper, whatever, the blonde-haired lady, who says how she saw Zimmerman on top. If Zimmerman was on the bottom and he shot, then obviously Trayvon fell limp and fell over, you know, that would explain why he's now on top. He's, you know, he's probably in shock of somebody else. You know, a lot of people are trying to make that like he was on top of Trayvon, you know, and I'm not saying, I don't know. That's one thing. I when I first heard about this, I was more disgusted as anybody else. The guy got out of his car with a gun, you know.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, you know, that doesn't mean that what he did was unlawful. And the issue is, you know, just as from what I'm understanding from law enforcement, that just, you know, if he does have grass hands on his back, if he does have a busted nose, if he does have cuts in the back of his head, well, you know, at some point he was obviously on the bottom, you know, so and so that just doesn't, to me, the people that saw it after the fact, that's not really as, you know, important to me, and I don't think it should be to anybody that's trying to determine, because the key issue again is what happened before that, not what happened after the shot was fired, because if we know after the shot was fired, it's too late. It's what happened before the shot was fired that we only George Zimmerman knows, and apparently law enforcement have, you know, determined that his version meets the physical evidence.
All right.
Well, and the thing is, like you said, Richard Hornsby, is he had a right to have a gun. And that's the thing that just, I don't mind. I mean, believe me, I am for gun rights. I have no problem with that. I am not for some yahoo who thinks that they're on neighborhood watch going out with a gun and confronting a 17-year-old kid.
Well,
and the kids.
Trisha, here's the thing. Everybody keeps saying a 17-year-old kid with Skittles and iced tea. the law does not require, will tell the jury not to determine it from the state of the facts as they actually were, but how George Zimmerman would have viewed them. Okay?
Right, you're
and
right.
Here's George Zimmerman. Here's how George Zimmerman viewed it. He saw a suspicious male that he didn't recognize in the neighborhood, who apparently, even according to the guy's girlfriend, put on his hood and then kind of, you know, started walking fast. He was apparently in the back of someone's house. That's pretty suspicious in and of itself, if this lady who was looking on her back porch could see it. You know, George Zimmerman didn't know this kid was 17. George Zimmerman didn't know this kid had Skittles. George Zimmerman didn't know this kid had iced tea. That's the problem. Hindsight and retrospect, that makes it very sympathetic. And I think, but let me ask you this. What if this kid had been burglarizing or been looking to break into somebody's house? What if? Well, certainly we would have been, poor George Zimmerman, he was just doing what anybody would expect, and we wouldn't feel bad for the person that was dead.
I still wouldn't want him shot for breaking. Absolutely not. Absolutely
not.
There's no
death penalty for stealing, but
it just you know, the cops carry guns and shoot people. That you know, it's just the situation that has been created that is just wrong. And you're right, Richard Hornsby. The law is on his side.
And here's where the problem is with the law. The one thing that the Stand Your Ground law it started, which didn't used to be the fact, is it said that if law enforcement cannot disprove a person's claim of self-defense, they can't arrest.
Right.
A person. And that's why George Zimmerman hasn't been arrested yet, is because the law, the new law actually says that if law enforcement can't, overcome a person's claim of self-defense based upon the evidence, they're not allowed to arrest that person. And under the old law, what would happen was law enforcement would have said, we'll arrest first and ask questions later. And so the Trayvon Martin's family wouldn't feel like they're just getting no justice at all. And that's why I think this case is really rich to all of us, is that none of us can understand how a child can be dead and no one's at least been arrested at a minimum. And that's where I think the biggest problem with the Stand Your Ground law is that it created this statutory immunity which said that law enforcement can't arrest people unless, you know, they're able to, based upon the evidence, disprove the person's claim of self-defense. And that's why I think all of us are just in absolute shock. And that's why I'm in shock. I mean, I argue to juries all the time that it's ridiculous that cops arrest first and ask questions later, but unfortunately, whenever there's a dead body, I kind of think they should arrest first and ask questions later, but the law says now they can't.
Hey, Richard, what did you think of when he was on the 911 call himself, Zimmerman, and he's talking to the operator, and it's pretty clear when you're listening to it that he's following Trayvon. Then at one point the operator says, well, are you following him? And he says, yeah. And the operator says, well, okay, we don't need you to do that. But he continued to do that. How do you feel about that?
I think it's ridiculous. Don't get me wrong. I think the whole situation is ridiculous because I do agree that George Zimmerman, some yahoo, clearly there's some issues there. I mean, but I don't necessarily agree with the kind of rush to judgment that we've all come because, here's this guy who's trying to be, you know, a neighborhood watch guy, and should he have disobeyed law enforcement? No, but that wasn't illegal, and that's the big issue, is that that doesn't mean he's provoking the fight. That doesn't mean he's aggressive because he's following this guy. We don't know how Trayvon, and that's the big issue I keep trying to stress to everybody, that we don't know what George Zimmerman says Trayvon did to instigate, and I'm not saying Trayvon instigated, but whatever caused them to come into physical altercation. That's the missing piece that all of us are having. You know, if for whatever reason, law enforcement found it pretty compelling to believe that, so much so they believed George Zimmerman.
Right.
Isabel, do you know what sort of investigation that law enforcement did after the shooting? Because we know that the police chief has resigned. And a lot of people are saying that they really didn't do that of an in-depth of an investigation into what happened.
Well, that's what I've heard as well. And that, you know, obviously it's been turned over to the, well, not turned over, but they're taking it over, the U.S. Justice Department, FBI, and so on. I think the pressure is mostly why the chief resigned, I'm assuming, and he's not really resigned. He's just stepped down temporarily.
Yeah,
he's
stepped down temporarily. You're right.
Right. So that's, you know.
Hold on. I need to interrupt you for just a moment. Levi Page has to go get ready for his show. So, okay. Levi, thank you so much for joining us. I asked all of my guests at the very last minute, and they've all been wonderful. So, Levi, we're going to excuse you early, young man. And you go get ready for your show.
Thanks, Trisha. Thanks for having me on. You have a great
And we'll,
night.
we'll we'll turn over to your show as soon as we're done here, okay?
Well, I'm actually not on tonight, but I got something else to do. But
oh,
thanks for
I
having
you had,
me on.
Oh, you're welcome, my dear. Thank you so much.
All right, bye.
Okay, Richard Hornstein. Oh, go, Isabel Zender from TheExaminer.com. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that, you know, I saw that this new Black Panther Party has a $10,000 reward for the
that
capture
makes me sick.
Of Zimmerman, and it's, you know, dead or alive and all that. And I don't think that is the answer. I think this is starting to get out of control. I mean, that's just my perception. And that this should, you know, we need to let the Justice Department, we need to let the FBI, we need to let them all do their investigation at this point.
But here's the problem. Here's the more moderate leaders, such as supposedly Al Sharpton and Reverend Jesse Jackson, they're not coming out and completely denouncing, and neither is Trayvon Martin's family or the lawyer. They're not coming out and completely denouncing the actions of the new Black Panther Party. And that, to me, you know, is a terrible double standard. They're not saying it's disgusting. They're not saying we don't condone it. As a matter of fact, Reverend Jesse Jackson was preaching at a predominantly, well, one of the largest black churches here in Central Florida today, and he was saying this is a war. That type of rhetoric, you know, if that would have been a white Ku Klux Klan that would have been saying we got a bounty for a black kid that supposedly killed white brothers, you would have had arrests left and right. And that's the problem, is this huge double standard that's being imposed because,
I think so,
you know, Zimmerman's being painted. So, and listen, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he is white. He's got, you know, Zimmerman's not exactly a Hispanic name, but he claims to be Hispanic. So why? So, you know, the media's having problems with trying to paint him as a white guy. So now they're saying he's a white Hispanic. I mean, you know, there's a lot. The racial issues are here. I was disgusted that the president of the United States, and I support Obama, but he came out and he's, you know, and he made an issue of this first one, because how is George Zimmerman ever supposed to get a fair shake when you got the president of the United States basically saying, I don't think what that guy did was right? I mean, you know, I think that the whole situation has gone from, you know, two wrongs don't make a right, I guess, is the way I look at it.
Me too.
Well, that's the truth. I just, I think the law in Florida is part of the biggest problem here. George Zimmerman, in my opinion, until I hear something different, it just sounds like to me that Trayvon was scared to death and didn't know what to do, and he's a kid. Let's just keep remembering that. He's a kid, and they don't always make the best decisions, and Zimmerman was the adult with the gun, and that's the problem in my book. I'm going to let everybody wrap things up here just a little bit. Mr. Hornsby, you have any final thoughts on this?
Just I hope everybody remembers there's two sides to every story, and just to wait until everything's released before they make a final judgment about whether George Zimmerman was right or wrong.
And, I
agree. Richard Hornsby, I want to say thank you. I don't think you got anybody mad enough to, like, want to, you know, throw eggs at the radio or anything tonight. Thank you. That's, I mean, you know, I miss that. We got to get you back and get you going again. But thank you, Richard Hornsby. You literally came on. I talked to you right when the show was going, and you agreed to come on. And I really appreciate that. You really helped us understand this law a great deal. And thank you so much. Give us the address of your blog, please.
It's blog.richardhornsby.com, or you can just go to my website, richardhornsby.com, and click on the blog link at the bottom.
Thank you so very, very much. Isabel Zender from TheExaminer.com. Again, you saved me. You came on at the last minute as well. You have sent me some amazing transcripts that I'm going to go over, and I'm going to ask later your permission to post. Thank you for providing the audio as well. What are your final thoughts?
I totally agree with Richard. What he just said is his final comments, just, you know, to wait and see. And not to rush to judgment till we know all the facts. And that's
I just wish, you know, I understand the outrage, you know. I just wish
I understand the outrage, but I don't like to see you know, someone saying we want Zimmerman dead or alive. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. That makes it so much worse. They've got to stop that. It's not going to help the situation
at all. It's not. It needs to be done the right way. If you did something wrong, it should come out. You know, there were a lot of witnesses. Everybody has to, you know, the night of the calls, everybody was frantic. When they sit down and think about it and have time to be interviewed by police. I'm sure that that everybody's going to be interviewed, the girlfriend who was on the phone with him, everybody. And
right.
They're putting this all together, and it's a huge case, and I'm sure that it's got their utmost attention. So
absolutely.
I think we should just wait for the system to do its job and
to work, and hopefully they'll get that law changed in Florida, because that's a ridiculous law that just infuriates me,
mm-hmm.
you know, that somebody could carry a gun and shoot somebody. I mean, what are mm-hmm. you supposed to do if it's not a cop? Of course you're going to fight back. I don't know. It just makes me crazy. Okay,
well, and the Neighborhood Watch Association, the head of the Neighborhood Watch Association, was reading something, like it's a nationwide thing, said that two things, you don't carry a gun and you don't pursue somebody. That's not
mm-hmm.
the point of being a neighborhood watch person. That we have neighborhood watch, and what we're supposed to do, be the eyes and ears, and then be the mouth. You know, you watch, you hear, and you call. You call the police. You don't go pursue people.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't the point. You know, so.
Exactly. Well, yeah, George Zimmerman has really harmed neighborhood watches all over, you know, by doing this. So, Isabel Zender, Richard Hornsby, thank you very, very much. I'm sure I'll be in touch again soon. Thank you.
Well,
have a good night.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Bye-bye. Kimster, are you there, my dear?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, we're going to get to the hot cold case in just a little bit, but I want to talk about Haley Dunn for a moment. We tried to get Billy Dunn on again tonight, and she just wasn't up to it, and that's understandable. Earlier this week, a body was found fairly close to Billy Dunn's boyfriend's mother's home. Billy Dunn's boyfriend is Sean. A lot of people think that Sean had something to do with it. Billy Dunn says absolutely not. He would never do it. We've heard the interview with Billy Dunn on Web Sleuth Radio before. We know, I think we all have a pretty good idea of Billy's situation there. But I read in the paper on several articles that they were 90% sure that this was Haley Dunn. And then come to find out it's a male. Now, I heard all kinds of rumors that Haley's clothes were found with the body and all kinds of things. Kimster, I want to ask you, and I'm just putting this out there, I'm just going to float it out on the internet. Do you think that when that body was found so close to Sean's mother's house, Billy Dunn's boyfriend, the one person that a lot of people think took Haley Dunn, do you think the police floated that out there to see how Billy and Sean would react? What do you think, Kimster?
I think it could happen. I have conflicting feelings about law enforcement misleading the public, but I know
mm-hmm.
they do it sometimes. And in the long run, if it means bringing a killer to justice, I personally don't have a problem with it. But it is really difficult on the other hand, because you know, I'm very much concerned about victims' families and friends and loved ones, and I don't like seeing them put those people through it. But if it were me, and it meant they had to lie to me to finally get justice for my loved one, I would
mm-hmm.
I would say yes, it's okay to do that.
Well,
I don't know
if they did this. I'm just floating it.
You know. Yeah, and you know, we've read books about crime cases. I know I've read some by Anne Rule in the past, and she's talked about law enforcement kind of misleading the public. But
mm-hmm.
I've never seen them heard of them misleading the public to this kind of an extent where it comes
right.
to remains. So that I don't know that they would do that, but they could, you know.
I'm just wondering why they were so sure it was Haley. I don't know if that came from the police department or if it came from a source. I just don't know. But it was such a complete turnaround. Oh, no, it's a male. Never mind. You know, and then you have to say, well, was something found with the body that made them think it was Haley? You know, is it connected? I mean, who knows? Crazier things have happened, as we all
yeah.
know. I have been in touch with Chief Owens. He's been very gracious. I'm working on getting him on the show. I don't know if he'll ever come on, but I certainly hope so. And he's been very, very gracious in responding to me. So keep your fingers crossed, and we'll see if we can get him on the show. Okay, Kimster, we have a very, very interesting hot cold case from Web Sleuth that our members and listeners can help with. So the floor is yours, my dear.
Okay.
This week's hot cold case is about Pamela Ann Pedro, who is missing from Atwater, California, and that's been since 1982. Pamela's first cousin first posted in the unidentified forum while discussing possible victims of the Speed Freak serial killers. And there, by the way, there's also a discussion about the Speed Freak serial killers and the bounty hunter Lenny Padilla in the serial killer forum. But the cousin was posting because there was some discussion of whether Pamela Pedro might have been one of the remains found in that case where they've been digging up remains. But I wanted to read to everyone what Pamela's cousin wrote in his post. It's quite touching, and this is what it says. If I can share with you some of the days following Pamela's disappearance, I was in the sixth grade when she disappeared. Our family was devastated. We had many long weekends going to my uncle's house to do some family searches. There were many, many crank calls to my uncle's house leading us to believe that she was abducted. It was just someone on the line crying and whispering, I want to come home. We never found out if the calls were real. Interactions with police, detectives, and investigators were really horrible compared to what we see today. I don't remember the name of the person, but there was one person of interest that was stationed at Castle Air Force Base. I don't know what became of that part of that investigation. We think about Pamela daily as our lives keep trudging forward. Many times I dream about her coming home and catching up with her. I could go on rambling, but it's hard as I reminisce. I turn into that young boy in the sixth grade crying about her missing, worrying about her safety, and wondering if we will ever see her again. Then he said, to all of you who are actively searching and helping out, not just the search for Pam, but everyone else who is missing, thank you for everything you do.
Wow, that's very touching. I mean, what a tragedy. Oh, my gosh, I can't imagine.
Like J-Lo says on American Idol, I got goosies right now. I mean,
right.
It just every time I read that, I get goosebumps, my eyes tear up. This girl has been gone since 1982, and this wound is still bleeding for this family. And we have to remember that. We have so many people on Web Sleuth that need to be found. Please, again, I know I sound like a broken record every week, but if you can just grab one of these cases, go in the unidentified forum, try to see if you can figure out who the remains might be. They might match up with some of these people that are missing and give their families some peace.
That's it. And again, as we always say every week, you know, if you go in and just say, I'm thinking of you, that can help a family just as much as anything. You don't need to be the big superhero and solve the case. Just go in and say, I'm thinking of you, I'm thinking of your loved one, and we'll say a prayer. That helps tremendously, right, Kimster?
Exactly. If you go into Pamela's thread and see, that's just what he wrote at the end. Thank you for helping everyone. I mean, not just Pam, but he thanked them for helping with every case, which was very touching.
Exactly. Well, Kimster, that does it for tonight. I want to thank you. I want to thank the members in the chat room. Thank you so very, very much. And as soon as I'm done here, I'm going to put up the information about the search for Sierra Lamar tomorrow. We are going to really need people in the area to help us out, to make phone calls for us, to try and get donations of food and water, anything you can do to help, because it's hard for me, you know, here in Utah to try and arrange it and to pay for it and to do all that. That's why I really, anybody, if you can help out, just even if you can't make donations or pay for it, just call and see if you can get somebody to help us donate. But we'll have all of that information up and ready to go here within the next hour. Kimster, we will see you next week. Thank you for everything. And don't forget, Web Sleuth Radio every Sunday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Web Sleuth Radio, where we talk about true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.